With the right springs, will somebody really be able to leap over buildings like Czech World War II urban legend Perak? Which superhero's powers are the most credible? And just why are there so many superhero movies? Recently, I discussed those questions and more with James Kakelius, author of The Physics of Superheroes, who was in the Czech Republic to give a talk at the Colors of Ostrava's Melting Pot Forum. But the US scientist first explained how he'd come to use superhero stories to teach physics.
I'm a physics professor at the University of Minnesota, and I'm also a longtime comic book fan. So that means that I'm technically a geek and a nerd. Sorry for your listeners, but I'm already married. So I was teaching introductory physics, and I was just trying to come up with an exam problem one day that hadn't been done 100 times already. And being a comic book nerd, it occurred to me that the death of Spider-Man's girlfriend, Gwen Stacy, in, as all your listeners know, Amazing Spider-Man number 121, would be a perfect illustration of momentum and impulse. And so I put it on the exam. The students really enjoyed it. And I said, hey, maybe I'll start bringing in other examples and we can analyze them from a physics point of view.
And does this go down equally well with female and male students?
It does. And more so nowadays than it did 20 years ago when I first started doing this. And I ascribe that to the movies. Back when I first started, there were only a couple of movies, and it was mostly just the comic books themselves. But now, everyone knows these characters thanks to the successful movies. And they're popular, I believe, with men and women. And so we have, and sometimes in these classes, we have more women than men.
Which superheroes' powers are most believable from the point of view of physics?
Well, powers themselves, being able to, you know, violate the laws of nature, are not believable at all. There are some characters, some heroes and villains, who don't actually have powers themselves. You think of Batman. But, of course, the number of times that Batman has been knocked out in 80 years of fighting crime, he should have permanent brain damage by now. But you also think about, say, Iron Man, who uses technology to fight crime. And certainly there, every aspect of Iron Man's armor, we can build it today with one exception. We don't know how to make the energy supply. He has a small little arc reactor in his chest that puts out the power of 3 nuclear power plants, and it's the size of a hockey puck. And if we knew how to do that, we wouldn't need superheroes.
And is there anything that we see today in superhero movies or superhero comics that you expect someday will come down the line and will exist in the real world?
Well, one thing that's actually coming already is something in Iron Man that we don't really notice very much. Whenever Iron Man, you know, starts off and flies, or he fires his repulsor rays out of his gloves, we never see him press a button. We never see him give a voice command. He just thinks about it, and it happens. And in the comic books, it's explained that he has a cybernetic helmet, which picks up his thought waves and transmits it to the suit. And this is actually real. There are scientists who are developing cybernetic helmets that pick up the very weak electromagnetic waves that are generated in your brain when you think. They amplify them and then can transmit them via Bluetooth to a computer or to some other device. And these scientists and engineers are not trying to make an Iron Man suit, but they are trying to develop treatments for paralysis and prosthetic limbs. And so there are some things that you would think to be total fantasy if you read them in a comic book. When I read them in a comic book back 50 years ago, I thought they were total fantasy, and they're turning out to be real today.
For you, is it frustrating if you come across bad science or even like really, really ridiculous science?
Sometimes it's not frustrating as so much as funny, that when it's really, really bad, you notice it and you laugh, but from the point of view of the comic books or from the point of view of the movies, that's a terrible thing. This is why, actually, Hollywood movie and TV creators are talking more and more to professors, because they know that any time an audience member is laughing at the bad science in a movie is a moment when they're not paying attention to the story. And so they try to make things just good enough that you don't notice it without turning it into a boring physics lesson.
But still, don't all of these, or I presume all of these superheroes, there is some suspension of disbelief?
Oh, absolutely there's a suspension of disbelief. If nothing else, like even even for Batman, who doesn't have any powers, that you'd have some billionaire who dress up like Dracula and go out at night and beat up muggers, it requires a suspension of disbelief. The thing with these movies is, if you play fair with the audience, if you say, okay, we're going to say that, say, The Flash can run at super speed. Okay, that's fine. And then whatever problems he has or whatever traps he's in, he can only escape them using his super speed. If suddenly he's able to fly, if suddenly he can shoot laser beams from his eyes, you'd say, wait, you're cheating. You're not playing fair. And I think the audience, as long as you lay out what the hero can do and cannot do, then I think it's perfectly okay.
From your perspective, which superhero has the coolest power?
I don't know about the coolest power. I know the power I want. I know the power that I would love. Whenever I'm stuck in rush hour traffic, whenever my plane has been canceled, I wish I had super speed so that I could run and just get to where I need to go.
Have you heard of this Czech superhero, kind of Spring Hill Jack figure, who fought the Nazis called Perak?
I certainly have. I learned about Perak very recently, but when I did some research on it, I thought it was so great. I put him in my talk that I will be speaking here at Melting Pot about the physics of superheroes. And I will use Perak to illustrate conservation of energy. And we will calculate how strong his springs have to be in order for him to make his leaps.
And is it possible for somebody, if they had sufficient springs or the right kind of springs, to leap over buildings if they had springs on their feet?
Yes and no. The type of spring that you need has to be much stronger than steel. And I'm not quite sure we know how to make a metal that would be that springy, that would enable one to leap that tall. But now we have a goal and we know what we're working for, so perhaps I just need to get back into the lab and get to work on it.
Generally speaking, why do you think superhero movies are so popular?
The reason they're popular now is probably the same reason why these characters that were first introduced 50, 60, 70 years ago are still being published in comic books today. These characters kind of speak to something basic. Spider-Man, he gains his powers, and he first tries to use it for selfish reasons. And then he realizes that with great power, there must also come great responsibility. That's a lesson. That's a story that resonates today as much as it did back in 1962. And we all have powers. We all have gifts and talents. How we choose to use them, selfishly, for our own personal gain, or do we use them to help others, determines the type of stories that we're in. And these comic books can tell engaging stories, and then at the end of the story, the bad guy gets punched. How great is that?
Do you ever feel there are too many, especially with the Marvel ones? It seems like every month there's a new movie.
I wish. Listen, I'm old enough that I remember the most horrible superhero TV shows and horrible superhero movies. Well, the Superman movies were not bad. The first Batman movies were not bad. But I grew up and I went through this long period, the desert of geekdom. And so now we finally are in a golden age of geekdom. You know, if they're making too many of them, people stop going and then they'll stop making quite so many of them. As long as they can keep the quality up, I think that people will be happy.
You describe yourself as a geek and a nerd. Today, being a geek, being a nerd, seems really mainstream. How do you view that, this pretty big shift in the culture?
It is a big shift. It's not quite, the shift hasn't fully occurred. When I look back at comic books back in the 1960s, there were many comic book stories that featured Earth being attacked by giant monsters. Every month, another giant monster. And the police, the military could not stop them. and Earth would be doomed if not for the efforts of a lone scientist who usually figured out the one weakness of the monsters. And there it was understood that science was going to save us. Scientists were going to save us. And now science in some countries is under attack. It's under attack, and at the same time, as citizens and as voters, we are expected to have more, have opinions about scientific and technological questions, whether it's climate change, nanotechnology, genetically modified organisms. And so the more that we can convey science to the public who has to make these decisions, who should make these decisions, but you need to make decisions based upon knowledge, not just based upon the last person you saw yelling on TV, I think will lead to better results for everyone.
But generally, on this issue of geeks becoming the mainstream, do you feel like you used to be an outsider and now you're not?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. I did feel a bit more of an outsider, and now certainly not. That's exactly right. On the other hand, whenever I feel too accepted, there's always my family to bring me back to Earth.